Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Makos Daf Hey. Don't forget to click on the doc option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the shiur. And even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. On Daf Hey, at the top of the page, we encounter a new Mishnah. The Mishnah and topic heading that we've assigned to this involves the division of money and the non-division of Malkos. In our Shas Ozer marked Gemara edition, you can see on your screen, we have a nosei, a topic heading featured in the margin. We've written in Mishalshin, that means dividing, Mishalshin b'mamon ve'ein Mishalshin b'makos. We divide amongst the witnesses, the Edom Zomimim, that we, as a result of their lying, we punish them with the punishment we entitle Kasher Zomam. What they try to do, they in turn get. Since witnesses number a minimum of two, when it comes to an attempt of theirs to testify falsely about someone owing money, let us say you have two witnesses and they said about the defendant that he owed $100, and it turns out that they're lying, we say that each witness shall pay $50 to the defendant. Let us say that two witnesses testified that the defendant ate pork. Pork is something, the eating of pork is something punishable by lashes. Lashes number 39. The Torah refers to them as 40. We don't divide the lashes, take 39 and divide it half of that going to one and half the second witness getting lashed the other half number. In other words, 19 or 20 per witness. But each one of the witnesses will get the full 39 lashes. The Mishnah. Mishalshin v'mamon v'ein mishalshin v'makos. We divide the penalty of money, but we don't divide the penalty of lashing. Ketzad. We have continued our numbering system here with letters. Aleph will correspond to the issue of mamon that was also labeled Aleph just above. And later in the Mishnah you'll see Bays featuring the issue of the Malkus. So, Ketzad, how is this to be understood? Heidu shuchayev l'chavero masayim zuz. Two witnesses testified that the defendant was obligated to pay a debt of 200 zuz to so-and-so. V'nimtzu zomimin, and they're found to be liars. Mishalshin b'nehem, the amount that they were testifying falsely about, is to be divided amongst the number of witnesses that testified, each one paying his share. Avol im hediu shuhayev malchus arboyim. If, however, they testified that he, the defendant, violated some type of avera that is chayev lashing, the number of lashing, the Mishnah uses the Torah expression 40. V'nimtzu zomimin, and the witnesses are found to be lying. Kol echad v'echad loike arboyim. Each one of the witnesses gets the full quota of 40 lashes. Mino hani mili. From where do we know that each witness gets the full quota of lashes? Omar Abaye, Neemar Rosha. The word Rosha appears in the Torah b'chayvei Malkios, v'neemar Rosha b'chayvei Misos Bezdin. And the word Rosha appears by capital punishment as well. In other words, the word Rosha appears in two places, once in the context of someone who's chayev lashing, and the other in the context of someone who's chayev to be executed by the court. Just like in the case of execution, let us say two witnesses testified about so-and-so that he violated Shabbos, deliberately violated Shabbos, which carries with it a death penalty, and then they are found to be lying. Each one of the witnesses will be put to death. So just like we say by miso, ein miso lemechso, execution is not divided, obviously. Afkan, so too, in the realm of Malkos, we say Ein Malkos Lemechsa. The lashings are not divided either. Rav Omar, Rav explains, Bo'inon ka'asher zomam la'asois le'ochiv v'lecha. They are to be punished with what they intended to give to the, or see the defendant punished with. So that if they intended the defendant to receive 40 lashes, so the witnesses, each one will get the 40 or the 39 lashes. Ihochi mamonami. So if that be the case, why not say the same thing by mamon? Just like we're saying by the lashings, each one of the witnesses gets the full quota of lashes. If these two witnesses testified that the defendant is chayav, let us say, $100, so let each one of the witnesses pay $100. The Gemara answers, mamon mitzaref, malkois loy mitzaref. The nature of money is such that it adds up. $50 from one witness and 50 additional dollars from the second witness equals $100. And that's what they were trying to have him lose, that is the defendant. So by paying him $100, they are restoring to him or granting to him what they intended for him to lose. But this logic can't be said about Malkos. In other words, if we use the number 40 Malkos just for a moment, it's not true to say that 20 Malkos lashed, that one witness gets lashed, and 20 Malkos that the other witness gets lashed add up to what they were trying to do to the victim. Because the 20 and 20, two halves, does not equal the pain of 40. Rashi points out, Momo mitzaref, vare kibel ma sherotsu lehafsido ben kulam. One gets the impression, one can get the impression from Rashi that the ultimate way that we of dealing with the Edim Zomimim is to see to it that the defendant receives what they were trying to have him lose. That's true when we can talk about the defendant receiving from the witnesses whatever it is. However, in the case of lashing, the pain, so to speak, that the witnesses will be absorbing is not something that is transferred to the defendant. So, out of default, in the case of lashings, we cannot say they're mitzaref, because the nature of lashing is something that is a type of punishment where the witnesses are not giving over to the defendant any substance. However, as we said already, just to review the point, when it comes to a type of penalty where the defendant gets what they were trying to cause him to lose, the main thing is that he gets that amount. It's much less important that each witness would pay the full amount on his own. The Mishnah, Ein ho'edim ma'nasim zoimimim ad shi'ozimu es atzmon. We're starting a Mishnah now that is going to have a similar style to the opening Mishnah of this Maseches, whereby the Mishnah opens up with a statement and it says, Ketzad, how is this to be understood? And the immediate clauses, the immediate lines that follow, in fact, do not illustrate what the opening of the Mishnah says. Therefore, in order to preserve the flow of the Mishnah and its intent, let us take advantage of the brackets that we've included in the Mishnah as it continues. We'll skip those couple lines initially to preserve the flow, and then we'll go over it again with the bracketed section. So the Mishnah opens up with a statement that Ein ho'edim na'asim zomimim ad shi'ozimu es atzmon. Witnesses do not become edim zomimim until the second set of witnesses testifies against the witnesses themselves. Ketzad, how is this to be understood? So we skip the bracketed section. Omru Lohem, the second set of witnesses, comes in and talks to the first set of witnesses and says, Hech atem me'idim, how can you possibly testify about that event? Shere atem, and we've underlined the word atem because this is the key word. This word is what was meant by Yozimu es atzmon that we saw at the before the brackets. Because you, Share Atem, Hoyisamimonu, Osoyom Bamokom Ploni, you fellows were with us at the time you claimed the event to have taken place in a different location. Hare Elu Zomamin, Vinerogin Alpihem, with that type of testimony on the part of the second witnesses, we thereby declare the first witnesses zomimim, and they are to be executed in the case where they were testifying about a murder. Let's go over the Mishnah again with the bracketed section. We have a note that accompanies the brackets with that's indicated by a star next to the brackets and the corresponding star in the margin. The inside margin you see, Acharei HaSograyim, HaMishnah Masbira Es HaPsicha. After the bracketed section, the Mishnah itself will explain its opening comment. B'socha Sograyim Uva Mikre Shedavka Eino Hezber LaPsicha. The section in the brackets is itself specifically not the explanation of the opening phrase. So, let's continue in the Mishnah from the beginning. Ein ho'edim nasim zomim ad shiyozimu es atzmon ketzad. Omru, if the first set of witnesses said, me'idim anu b'ish ploni shaharag es anefesh. The first two witnesses testify about a defendant that he committed a murder. Omru lohem, a second set of witnesses comes in and says, heich atem me'idim, how can you testify concerning this particular murder? Sharei neherag zeh, the victim, o hahoreg ze, or the murderer himself, the defendant, hoyo imanu osayom b'makomponi, they were with us on that very same day in a different location. Ein elu zomimim. The first set will not be declared zomimim as a result of this kind of testimony. Aval omru lohem, if the second set of witnesses said, hey chatem i'idim, how can you possibly testify? Shere atem hoyisem imanu osoyam b'mokom ploni, you were with us on that day in a different location. Hare elu zomimim, they are declared liars, the neherogin al pihem, and the first set of witnesses will be executed by virtue of the testimony of the second set of witnesses. Bo achirim v'hizumum. A third set of witnesses came in and testified like the first set. Condemnatory testimony concerning the defendant. Bo achirim v'hizumum. Another set of witnesses came in. And the original second set, the second set that are the mazimim, they showed them as well to be liars. Afilu mea, even if this continues again and again up to 100 set of witnesses, all testifying like the first set of witnesses, and that second set of witnesses are mazim, all of them claiming, hey, each one of you guys, how can you testify about this event? You were with us on that day in a different place. Kulam yeherogu. All of them are going to be executed by virtue of the testimony of that original second set of witnesses. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, istatis hi zu. What is taking place, this seems to be a type of conspiracy. Something is a little bit off, namely that this second set of witnesses is testifying concerning all of these other witnesses that they were with them at the time of the event in a different place, seems a little suspicious. The Eino Neherag Elokas Horishona Bilvad. And according to Rabbi Yehuda, only the original set of witnesses will be executed. Mino Hani Mili. From where do we know the teaching of the Mishnah that says, Ad Shiyazimu Es Atzmon? To answer this, the Gemara provides two approaches. Omar Rav Ado Ravadas explains, the Omar Kro, there is a posuk, Vine Eid Sheker Hoed Sheker Ono. And we darshan this to say, Ad Shetishoker Gufo Shel Edus, until we demonstrate as liars the Edim themselves, the witnesses themselves. Debe Rabbi Shmuel Tana, a second approach, Lanois Boy Sora. Ad shetasre gufo shel edus, until we show the wrongful nature of the witnesses themselves. The Rashi points out, lanois boisora, the parshas edim zomimim ksiv sora. in the section of the Torah dealing with Edom Zomimim, this term appears. Edus Hamuseres, testimony that is off. Shehusru Misham, that's removed from there. And we are removing these witnesses, the witnesses themselves, through the testimony of the second set. As you can see with our Gemara markings, we've included a slash mark at this point, indicating that the Gemara that follows is a new idea. We've also provided a Nosei Mivneh heading to this section of Gemara. You'll notice as you scan ahead, there appear to be a lot of geometric forms, and they are, of course, designed to make things clear and not the opposite. But in order to take full advantage of the markings, one has to analyze the role of each one. Of course, in general, it's not unnecessary to say that the geometric forms have no inherent significance. Each form vis-a-vis a second form, they all have the same role, and that is to connect related ideas or create a sense of a series. In our Shas Ozer, we attempt to offer explanations for most of the markings as they come along, sugya by sugya. So on the side, we have a nosei, the topic, mivneh, and structural note combined. We see a triangle featured. Sidra shel mikrim, a series of events. Shel edus v'hazoma she mevi rova, different cases of edim zomimim that rova presents. We will see in the Gemara also a double underline. This is to introduce divrei ha-mazimim, the words of the witnesses that prove or testify about the original ones as being false. We will encounter another geometric form, a bowtie form, and we'll explain that a little bit later. Omar Rava. We're calling this also Rava, we're lettering it as Aleph with a bow tie, and the corresponding, or the second Rava, Beis, will appear a few lines later, and we'll see the relationship between these two statements. Omar Rava, Bo Shnayim V'Omru, two witnesses come and say, B'Mizrach Bira Horag Ploni Es HaNefesh. On the eastern side of the of this large building, so-and-so committed a murder. Vo Shnayim V'Omru, a second set of witnesses come and say, V'alo B'Marov Bira Imonu Heisem. But you were, at the time you're claiming the murder took place, on the western side of the Bira. The question now is, are the first set of witnesses who testified that the murder took place on the eastern side, are they lying by virtue of the fact that at that very time, they, the witnesses themselves, were on the western side of the castle? Chazinon, so we evaluate. If when standing, on the western side of this large building, one can see that which is taking place on the eastern side of the building, ein elu zomimim, then the original witnesses are not lying. They could very well have been standing on the western side, viewing events, in this case a murder that took place on the eastern side. V'im lav, if however the distance precludes the possibility of viewing from one side to the other, then hare elu zomimim, then we understand that the first set of witnesses are liars. The Gemara asks, Pshita, this observation of Rava seems to be very obvious. The bowtie form is explained on the side. Shnei mikrim, two incidents. We just read the first one. Shenirim pshita, they appear to be very simple. And the question is, when you have a pshita question, then the question is, what is Rava trying to mechadish? What new point is he trying to tell us? So, the two incidents, Aleph, one involves beinyon mikum, positioning, location, and Beis, beinyon zman. The second one will be time-related. So, we have the story with the eastern and western side of the building. Can you see one point from the other? If you cannot see while standing in the west that which is taking place on the east, we say that the first witnesses then must have been lying. Pshita, this seems obvious. So Gemara answers, Mal detemo lechush lehurbori. One might have thought, without Rava declaring them to be zemimim, that even though most people cannot see that which is taking place on the eastern side when standing in the west, maybe these witnesses have extraordinary eyesight, nehorabori, extraordinary eyesight. And as such, I can't rule them out as being legitimate. Kamash Malon, Rava tells me I don't take that into consideration. I don't take into consideration that these specific eyes have extraordinary eyesight. The Omar Rava. Bo Shnai Vyamru Basura Bitsafra Bechad Bishabata Horak Ploni Esanepesh. Two witnesses come and testify that in the city of Sura, in the morning of Sunday morning in Sura, so-and-so killed someone else. Ubol Shnai Vyamru, two other witnesses, and say, Sunday afternoon, Befanya Bechad Bishabata, Sunday afternoon, Imonu Hayisem Benahar De'o. You were with us Sunday afternoon in the town of Nahar De'o. Chazinon, well, we evaluate. Imitzafra Lepanya Motzi Ozil Misuro Lenahar De'o. If from the morning hours till the afternoon one could travel from Sura to Nahar De'o, Lo Havu Zomimim, then these witnesses, the first set of witnesses, are not liars. They were in both places. In the morning they saw the murder, and by the afternoon they got to Nahar Da. The Elav, however, if it's impossible to cover that amount of ground in such a short amount of time, namely from morning till afternoon, then Havu Zomimim, then the first set of witnesses are liars. Once again, the Gemara asks, Pshita, what Rava is declaring over here seems to be obvious. What would have I thought otherwise? So, Mal Dutema, without Rava, I might have thought, Lechush Legam Leparcha, that one should suspect a fleet-footed camel, or a flying camel, or some form of transportation that was at the time not known by the masses, but maybe these guys, these witnesses that testified about a murder in the morning in Sura, were able to traverse the ground necessary to reach Nahar De'o in an extraordinarily rapid fashion. That's referred to by the Gemara by the term a flying camel. Maybe we should suspect that they had access to such a means of transportation, even though the masses don't. Kamash Malan, we don't suspect that, and if it appears that the distance between the two locations is too great to cover from morning to afternoon, then they must be liars. The Omar Rava. We have now a new section of Rava commentaries, but since Rava continues to be the featured speaker, we continue marking him with a triangle. However, we now encounter a diamond, and we want to take note of the role of the diamonded section, together with another marking that we see on the same line, a crown form. So, in our key on the side, we featured a Roman numeral number 1 and 2, you can see, and the diamond, which is going to surround the words Bo Shnayim. This will appear several times, indicating the beginning of a new case. And the crown form, Shnei Dugmois, one Beretzach, and two Betavicha. The Roman numerals represent two cases, one involving murder, and the second one involving the theft and subsequent slaughter of an animal. That's Betavicha Umechira, this theft of an animal and the subsequent slaughtering or resale of that animal. Shebechol Echad Me'amekrim Yesh Chidushim. In each one of these cases, there will be some type of chidush. Behakdomas Zman, we will see a house form emphasizing the chidushim section of these sources, of these dinim of Rava, either in the case of something called making something early, that's Hakdomas Zman. Of course, at this point, it's not understandable. Suffice it to say, there's a situation where a second set of witnesses makes something through their testimony, they testify about it having taken place earlier, or b'ichur zman, delaying, something about taking place later. This will be clearer when we go into the Gemara. What we're trying to do with the markings is to show the repetitive nature, or the structural nature of the Gemara being of a balanced nature. So we turn to the first case that we've labeled as Roman numeral number 1. Bo shnayim v'omru. Two witnesses come and say, b'chad b'shabata horag ploni es nefesh. Before we go further, if you just scan down the page and you see the next crown marking that appears, you'll see it's around the expressions gonav v'tovach u'mochar. Someone stole an animal. V'tovach u'mochar means he slaughtered it or sold it. But the first case focuses on a case of murder. So two witnesses come and say that on a Sunday, horag ploni es nefesh, so-and-so committed a murder. Ubo shnayim v'yomru, the second set of witnesses comes in. They're called the mazimim. V'yomru imonu hayisim b'chad b'shabata. You were with us all day on Sunday. So you couldn't possibly have testified about a murder on Sunday when you were with us and no murder took place where we were. Ella betray b'shabata horag ploni es nefesh. However, the defendant did commit a murder on Monday. So in effect, the testimony of the second set of witnesses says that the murder did take place, but a bit later than what the first set were claiming. It might be worth noting that the appearance of these witnesses is taking place, for illustration's sake, on a Tuesday. In other words, after the dates of the alleged murder. V'lo od ella, not only the case we just said where the second set of witnesses, the mazimim, agree that a murder took place, but later. Not only that, afilu amru, even if the mazimim, the second set of witnesses, notice how we've consistently used the double underline when featuring the statements of the second set of witnesses, afilu amru, even if the second set of witnesses came and said, erev Shabbos horag ploni es hanefesh, that the defendant committed the murder on Friday. In other words, they're making it earlier. Notice with the marking, we featured this in our introductory remarks by looking at the side, we saw Hakdomas Man. By saying Erev Shabbos, they're making the event of the murder take place earlier than the original set of witnesses said. Nevertheless, Hare Elu Neherogin, the first set of witnesses are to be executed. You'll ask, why? Because when they testified, when the first set of witnesses testified, Gavra Lav Bar Ketei Lahu, the defendant was not someone that was subject to being killed. When the first set of witnesses came in on Tuesday morning with their story about a Sunday murder, the defendant could have, before they spoke, could have on, let us say on Tuesday, could have confessed having committed the murder, and by having confessed to having committed the murder, he would have exonerated himself. That's the halacha with regard to cases of murder. And it happens to be true when with other cases of halacha where a person comes and confesses. For example, in cases of knas, we say moide b'knas poter. We saw this in a previous sugya as well. So the main point is, when they testified, when the first set of witnesses testified on Sunday, on Tuesday morning about a murder that had taken place on Sunday, which never took place, which didn't take place on Sunday, the defendant was someone who could have come and confessed and thereby saved himself. So they were trying to condemn a person that himself might not have been executed. Let us glance at the Rashi My time o the beidna de komisidi, kishibo yom shlishi b'shabbes lehoidalov. When the first set of witnesses came on Tuesday to testify about this guy, about the defendant, akati gabro lav bar katlo. He was a man that was still not subject to execution. Shelo huad olov bebezin. There was no testimony prior to this about him in Beis Din. V'ilu hava osi umoide, had he, the defendant, come and confessed that he committed a murder, hava miftar, he would have been exempted. Nimsa sheheim hoyu mechayven miso, it turns out then that the first set of witnesses were attempting to condemn to death esmi she'eno roi lomu, someone who should not have to die. The Gemara continues asking on Rava, my komashmulan, what chiddush is Rava trying to convey? Rashi speaks out, if one is to think that maybe what Rava is teaching is that here we have a situation of the defendant will be executed because the second set of witnesses also says that the defendant committed the murder just at a different time. So is it that Rava is coming to describe a situation where the defendant is killed as well as the Edim Zomimim, which itself has a certain ring of novelty to it, of chidush to it, because we generally say that Edim Zomimim, if as a result of their testimony the punishment is carried out, so the witnesses themselves don't receive the punishment that we refer to as Kasher Zomam. And here we have a case, albeit different details, but on the surface it seems that we have a case of the defendant and the witnesses being put to death. And is that what Rava is trying to communicate to us? I don't need Rava for that. Tanina, we have a Tanaic source that already expresses that idea. And it says, and in our marking system, Tanaic sources that are presented outside of the Mishnah itself, we attempt to frame off so that it should stand out from the rest of the Gemara text. So here's a Tanaic source that says, Lefikach, Im nimseis echod mehen zomemes. If it is found that one of the two sets of witnesses is lying, hu vehein neherogin, v'hashniya ptura. For our purposes, even though this Tanaic source is stated in a different context, what we are emphasizing, and we do it with the markings as well, it says in this source that he, the defendant, and the witnesses, the one set of witnesses out of a couple sets of witnesses, but if one of the several sets of witnesses was found to be Zomimim, so the defendant and that particular set of witnesses will be executed. Vashni Aptura, the other set of witnesses that concerning whom there was no testimony of Hazoma, they are exempt. So, very simply, what is Rava teaching us? The Gemara answers, Seifa Masha'ein Kein B'Gmardin Itztrichalei. What we need is the Seifa of Rava's comment, which says, the Seifa of his comment is that the din regarding the witnesses in the case of a final verdict will not be the same. As a result of a gemar din, there is no longer any room for confession on the part of the defendant. Once a court reached a conclusion, there is no allowance for the defendant to come and confess his guilt. As far as the application is concerned, the Gemara now proceeds to present it. Bo'u, this is the Seifa of Rava. Bo'u shnayim v'omru b'chad b'shabata nigmar dino shoploni. Two witnesses come and inform us that on Sunday there was a verdict concerning so-and-so that stated that he is guilty. U'bo'u shnayim v'omru b'chad b'shabata imono ha'yisem. On that Sunday that you are claiming to have been witness to the Gemar Din, you were with us. Ela be'erev Shabbos Nigmar Dino Shelploni. But rather, on Friday was the Gemar Din. Velo oid. Not only that, Elo afilu omru betray b'shabata Nigmar Dino Shelploni. Even if the second set of witnesses
delay the Gemara Din, and they say that it took place on, not on Sunday like the first guys said, but on a Monday. Ein Elu Neherogin. The Zomimim, the liars, are not put to death. Debeidna de Komisidi, because on Tuesday, when they offered their testimony, Gavra Bar Ketelahu, the defendant was already subject to a death penalty. And hence, the defendant could not have confessed his innocence. Therefore, he was already a dead man by virtue of the Gemar Din, and not by virtue of the testimony offered by the original set of witnesses. V'chein le'inyan tashlume knas. And similarly with regard to payments of a knas nature, that the similarity, Rashi points out, let us glance at the Rashi, v'chein le'inyan tashlume knas, shamoide boi poter, dino nami, boze kedine nefoshos. The case of knas is such that when the defendant who happened to be guilty of something, let us take for example the kafel payment. Kafel payment is a double payment in the event that someone commits a stealthful theft. If this thief comes along before a court verdict is reached and he tells and he confesses to us, I committed a theft, he will only be required to restore the principal and not the double, not the extra payment, the double, the kafel, because kafel is a form of knas, and we say hamoide b'knas poter. So in this sense, that in this sense, tashlume knas is similar to the case of murder, just like we said by knas moide b'knas poter. So too we said earlier that one whose moide confesses having committed a murder, he thereby exempts himself from suffering a capital punishment. V'yesh chiluk bein edus gufa maisa le'edus shel gemar din. And likewise, as we saw before in the case of the murder, there is a distinction drawn between edus concerning the event itself, testimony concerning the event itself, and testimony concerning the verdict, the gemar din. As we go on in the Gemara, everything unfolds in front of us. With the marking system, we have tried to create a situation where one sees the balance, the similarity in sugyas, so that as we begin Roman numeral number 2, if one scans ahead, one will see the appearance of the markings very, very similar to the way they appeared under Roman numeral number 1. The difference being here is that before we were talking about a case of harag, as was featured in the crown marking, here we're going to feature gonav tavachu mochar, the case of someone stealing someone's animal, and after stealing it stealthily, he went ahead and either slaughtered it or sold it. That carries with it a payment of, depending on what kind of animal, of 4 to 5 times the principal value. So as we continue in the Gemara, we see the case bo shnayim v'yomru b'chad b'shabato gonav v'tavachu mochar. The first set of witnesses testifies that the defendant on a Sunday committed a theft and then slaughtered or sold the animal. Ubo shnayim v'yomru b'chad b'shabato imonu ha'yisem. On Sunday you were with us and you couldn't have testified about that event. Elo b'trei b'shabato, but rather on a Monday gonav v'tavachu mochar. The same event that was described took place, however, on a Monday. Mishalmin, the first set of witnesses that have been shown to be liars, have to pay the payment necessary, the knas for gonav tavachu mochar. Velood, not only that case where the second set of witnesses testified about the event taking place later. Not only that, elo afilu omru be'erev Shabbos gonav v'tavachu mochar. But even if the second set of witnesses said that the event took place earlier, that the defendant is guilty from an earlier point in time, mishalmin. Nevertheless, the first set of witnesses will have to pay the defendant for having lied about him. De'be'idna de'kol misadi, on Tuesday, when they testified on Tuesday. At the point on Tuesday, since prior to that, no one had said anything, no one had testified about him, he could have come in and confessed his guilt and been innocent of the knas payment. Gavro lav bar tashlumin hu. On Tuesday, up till the point that the witnesses came in, even though the events had already taken place, he could have confessed his guilt and thereby spared himself from paying. And therefore, these witnesses, by testifying, are thereby trying to lock him out of confessing. Therefore, they are the ones responsible for his ultimate guilt and his ultimate guilt and obligation to pay. Therefore, since they're lying about him, they have to pay. Bo shnayim v'yomru b'chad b'shabato gonav v'tovach u'mochar v'nigmar dino. Notice how we've emphasized the expression once again with a slashed, dashed underline, the expression nigmar dino, as we did above in the Gemara. Two witnesses come and say that on a Sunday, so-and-so committed a theft, slaughtered, or sold it, and a final verdict was rendered. Ubo shnayim v'yomru b'chad b'shabato imonu ha'isem. On Sunday, you were with us. How could you have testified about a gemar din, ella erev, a gemar din that is on Sunday, ella erev Shabbos gona v'tavachu mochar, and the events took place earlier than what you said. It took place on a Friday, and v'nigmar dino, and a final verdict was reached regarding the defendant's guilt. V'lo od, not only a case where the second set of witnesses declares that the gemar din was earlier. Not only that, elo afilu amru betray b'shabos gona v'tavach u'mochar v'nigmar dino. They are making him, let's say, guilty later. They are saying that the gemar din was on Monday. Nevertheless, the first set of witnesses who testified what they did on Tuesday, ain mishalman, they don't have to pay, because the be'idna de komicity on Tuesday when they testified, Gavro bar tashlumenu, the defendant was anyway duty bound to pay. He couldn't have any longer confessed his guilt to get off the hook. So they, the witnesses, even though they're lying, they're not the ones that are responsible for his ultimate need to pay. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, istatis hi zu. Rabbi Yehuda in the Mishnah saw a second set of witnesses rendering zoymimim, not only the first set, but a third set, a fourth set, a fifth set, up to 100 people that came in to testify, and this second set was claiming that all of them, all of these other witnesses were with them at that time. The Gemara asks, based on what the Mishnah said that in that case, only the first set of witnesses are put to death. That itself is a rather odd din. If you're saying that this is a suspicious looking case, e istatis hizu, if the second set are conspiring, then afilu kas rishona nami lo, the original set of witnesses also should not be put to death. After all, they're the victims of testimony offered by a group that you're calling istatis, a group of witnesses, two witnesses that you're claiming are suspicious. Why is it that the Mishnah said that the first set of witnesses are put to death? Omer Rabbi Avo shekidmu v'hargu. Rabbi Avo says that the Mishnah is describing a case where they put them to death already. In other words, after the first set of witnesses testified about the murder, and the second set of witnesses was mazim them, there were no subsequent sets of witnesses at that point that appeared. So all we had was the second set being mazim the first set, and the first set being put to death at that point. The Gemara asks, if Rabbi Avos Pshat is correct, and that's what the Mishnah is teaching, my dehave have, what happened? In other words, there's no chidush in that in a case like that where they happen to have already put the first set of witnesses to death. Elo Amar Rova Hochi Komar. Rova has a rereading of the Mishnah. Im Eino Elo Kas Achas Neheregis. If there is only one set of false witnesses, as per the testimony of the second set, then the first set, which is the only other set, they will be executed.
if there are other sets of witnesses that are determined to be zomimin by that second set, if there are more sets of witnesses, then ein neherogen, then none of them are put to death. The Gemara asks, but ha bilvad ka'amar? The expression that the Mishnah used was that only the first set is put to death, which gives us the impression that there are other sets that are not put to death. But according to Rava's pshat, once you have multiple sets of witnesses that are being shown to be zomimim, then none are put to death. But the Mishnah doesn't agree with that. The Mishnah says that the first set alone is put to death, mashma, even in a case where there are other sets of witnesses. Kashya, this particular point is a difficulty. Hai itza the oso sadi v'ishtakur. There was a case involving a woman that brought witnesses in for her benefit, and they were found to be liars. Rashi says on the third line from the top, ishtakur hikrishu ze'eze bedrisho is based in kishibotkum. They were found to be contradictory through the questioning of the court when they cross-examined the witnesses, or when they checked out the witnesses. I see Sadi Vishtakur. This woman brought a second set of witnesses, and they too were found to be contradictory. Ozla, I see Sadi Achrini de Lo Ishtakur. Then she brings a subsequent set of witnesses that are not found to be liars. Omar Resh Lakish Huchsuka Zu. Resh Lakish says this woman lost her trustworthiness, and therefore we don't accept that third set of witnesses, even though they were not tripped up in their testimony. Amalei Rebbe Lozer. As the Gemara unfolds, we've underlined these names because they will be central to the Gemara later as it continues. So Rebbe Lozer responds, Imhi Huchsika, if the woman has shown herself to be interested in bringing liars to court, if she's shown to be a dubious individual, call Yisrael mi huchsiku. All the Jews, namely all the people, all the whole population from whom she's drawing, are they also established to be liars? Rashi on the first narrow line says, "Im hi huchsiku lechazer achareim, to seek out liars." Call Yisrael mi huchsiku lishmoa law. Is the entire population given the status of listening to her? Shetachzik es ha'achirim kishikarim, that we should, as a result of her attempts, conclude that everyone else are liars? Zimnin havu yasvi kamei de Rabbi Yochanan. On another occasion, they were seated in the presence of Rabbi Yochanan. Also kihai maisa lekamayu. A case like we just described came to Rabbi Yochanan. Omar Reish Lakish, Huchsukazu. Reish Lakish rendered the third set of witnesses, even though they were not shown to be contradictory, rendered them unfit because of the previous sets of witnesses that this woman brought in. Amale Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan says something that should sound a bit familiar to us. Im Huchsukazu, call Yisrael mi Huchsuku. If she's found to be a woman interested in perverting justice, perverting the truth, does that mean that everyone out there will listen to her? So if a third set of witnesses comes in that don't appear to be lying, we can rely on them. Notice that Rabbi Yochanan's comment is the same comment that Rabbi Lozer used a bit earlier. It should be noted that Rabbi Lozer was a student of Rabbi Yochanan's. Hodar Chazio L'Rebbe Elozer Bishus. Reish Lakish gazed upon Rebbe Elozer with wrath. Omar Le, Reish Lakish said, Shamis Mili Mibar Napcha, you heard something from Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan is referred to at times as Bar Napcha. You heard a halacha from him, Velo Amris Li Mishmei, and you didn't say it to me in his name. In other words, at the first stage of Gemara here, when Rebbe Elozer said what he said, Rebbe Elozer really had learned that from Rabbi Yochanan. But when Rebbe Elozer said it to Reish Lakish, he didn't quote Rabbi Yochanan as having been the author of that idea. Lema Reish Lakish domar k'Rabbi Yehuda, for Rabbi Yochanan diomar k'Rabbanan. Can we parallel Reish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan, who are in disagreement regarding the third set of witnesses and their reliability, that their machlokas parallels what we saw in the Mishnah Rabbi Yehuda and the Rabbanan. Let's just remind ourselves. Rabbi Yehuda said that there appears to be suspicion in the fact that the second set of witnesses was able to mazim all the others, and so that Reish Lakish places a premium on the appearance of Reish Lakish, who had placed a premium on the appearance of suspicion. He would seem to go like Rabbi Yehuda, who did likewise in the Mishnah. For Rabbi Yochanan, who didn't place a premium on the suspicious factors, would seem to go like the Rabbanan in the Mishnah, that accepted the possibility that the second set of witnesses were able to mazim all the others. So is this the way to parallel the opinions? Namely, Reish Lakish would line up with Rabbi Yehuda, and Rabbi Yochanan would line up with the Rabbanan. Oh, Maloch Reish Lakish. And by the way, a few lines later, you'll see Rabbi Yochanan Amaloch. We've squiggled and underlined their names to create a sense of relationship between the two opinions in this discussion. So Reish Lakish says, Ano di Amri Loch Afilu Rabbanan. My opinion will conform to the Shitas HaRabbanan in the Mishnah as well. Ad kan lo ko amri Rabbanan. Up till this point, the Rabbanan did not say what they said, that the second set of witnesses are ne'eman to mazim everybody. Ad kan lo ko amri Rabbanan hasam, the leko de ko mahader. There's no one that's seeking them out. So, being that they're operating on their own, each one of the witnesses that comes in are coming in on their own. No one is seeking them out. Aval hocha, says Reish Lakish. In my case, with the woman hiring them, aval hocha ika deka mehadra. There is the woman that's seeking them out. And as a result of her seeking them out, I'm going to raise the possibility that they are lying. That's as opposed to the case of the Mishnah, where the Rabbanan said there isn't necessarily any reason to suspect that the second set of witnesses are lying, because there was no one prompting the matter. The Rashi says, Dekar Mahadra, Levakesh Veliskar Ede Sheker. In the Mishnah's case, there was no one seeking out to hire false witnesses. Therefore, says Reish Lakish, that even though I do place a premium on the issue of suspicion, like I did in the case of the woman, that's because she showed that she was out to hire liars. That's not the case in the Mishnah. For Rabbi Yochanan Amar Lach, Ano the Amri Afilu Rabbi Yehuda. My opinion with regard to the third set of witnesses in the case of the woman, that we accepted them, I could conform to Rabbi Yehuda in the Mishnah. In other words, Rabbi Yehuda would accept my ruling here, even though Rabbi Yehuda in the Mishnah says regarding the cases of the case in the Mishnah is istatis, ad kan lo koma Rabbi Yehuda hasam. There only Rabbi Yehuda said istatis, that there seems to be something suspicious. The Amrina, because we view the scenario and say otikuli amo gabi hani habu kaimi. Since it's a case of Adim Zomimim, that was the case of the Mishnah, that was not the case that Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish were talking about. Since in the case of Hazoma, the necessity of hearing that they were with us in a different place, in the case of the Mishnah, then it would come out that all 100 pairs of witnesses were with the second group. That seems a little unlikely. That's what the Gemara just said. Otu kuliyama, could it be that everybody gabi hani havu kaimi, they were with the second set of witnesses? Very unlikely that all these disparate sets of witnesses were together with these guys. Avol hocha. But in the case of the woman who's hiring the witnesses, the first set, the second set, that were shown to be liars, avol hocha hani yadi, the last set of witnesses that she brought in, maybe it is that they knew the events. Hani yadi b'sadusa, v'hani lo yadi b'sadusa. And the first sets of witnesses didn't know about the testimony.
Ein ho edim zomimim neherogin ad shi gomer hadin. Edim zomimim are not put to death until the original defendant was condemned by virtue of their testimony. Sharei hatzedukim omrim ad shi yohareg. The tzedukim, people who do not accept the Torah Shebaal Peh, they held, their opinion was that edim zomimim are not put to death until a situation where the defendant himself is killed. If the defendant is killed and then they are shown to be zomimim according to the tzedukim, that's the case that the edim zomimim are put to death. The Rabbanon, on the other hand, the rabbis who disagree with the tzedukim say that we don't wait for a situation where the defendant is put to death, and only then, if the Edim are shown to be Zomim, will they be put to death? Because it's quite the opposite. If the defendant is put to death based on the testimony of the first set of witnesses, then there is no more Din Hazama that will apply. Shinemar Nefesh Benefesh. Omru Lohem Chachomim. Now, the Tzedukim held that the Din of Hazoma does not take place until you have a case where the defendant is put to death based on the testimony of the first witnesses, and they cite this pasuk that says nefesh benefesh, meaning life for life, that in the event that the defendant was put to death, then the din of kashu zoma will kick in. Omlem chachomim, the chachomim responded to the tzedukim and said, v'alo kvar nemar v'asisem loy kashir zomam la'asois lo'achiv, that you do to the witnesses what they conspired to do to le'ochiv, to the defendant. Vare ochiv kayom. In order for the Torah's precept to be fulfilled, you'll have to have the defendant still alive. Well, v'im kein lo manemar nefesh benefesh. So then, how are the Rabbanan to understand the psukim, the pasuk that the Tzedukim cited? So the answer to that is, yochol mishal shekiblu edusan yaharogu. Could it be that from the point that the testimony of the first witnesses was accepted, if at that point, the mere at the point of acceptance of their testimony, before a Gemar Din, and then a second set of witnesses would come in, mazin them, would we say, Yaharogu, that the first set of witnesses will be put to death, namely, even before the Gemar Din of the Nidon? Talmud Lomar, Nefesh Benefesh. The pasuk of nefesh benefesh teaches me ha eino neherogin ad shi gomer hadin, until there's an element of capital punishment to the case, not the actual capital punishment, but an element of capitalness to it, and that is only if, as a result of the testimony of the first witnesses, was a gemar din reached, and then they were shown to be zomimim. So, for illustration purposes, we can view this as there are three stages in time. There's the initial receipt of the testimony, there's a second stage, the Gemar Din, and the third stage, the case where the defendant is actually executed. So according to the Rabbanan, only in the middle case, the case of Gemar Din, can we talk about the possibility of Edim Zomimim. Before we go on in the Gemara, we have a nosei, a topic heading that accompanies this section. Makoros le'ein onshin min adin, kavachomer. We're going to see sources that tell us that we don't determine punishments through kavachomer logic. In other words, as we'll see illustrations of this, that when you want to establish that there's a punishment for a particular type of offense, a posik will have to say it, and it's not left to us to reason it through kal vachomer logic. And a second point that will be discussed, ein mazhirin min adin. We saw this in a previous shiur, the concept of azhara. Azhara means that in order for a Torah punishment to be carried out, it's not sufficient that there's one posik alone describing the punishment, the onish. There has to be another posik establishing that the offense is of a negative nature, of a low sasa mitzvah nature. That second posuk is called an azhora posuk, or azhora for short. Tana, Beribi Omer Lo Hargu Neherogin. Beribi is a name. He says that if the defendant is not killed, then the Edim Zomimim could be subject to a death penalty. Hargo, if the defendant was already executed based on the testimony of the first witnesses, Ein Neherogin, then the Edim Zomimim are not themselves put to death. Amar Oviv, Beribi's father said, Beni, Lav Kavachomer Hu. Shouldn't the rule be the differently? I don't want to say to the contrary, but if you're going to tell me that lo hargu neherogin, then hargu certainly neherogin. Amar lo. So Beribi answers the Maritana Rabbeinu. Says, you have taught us she'ein oinshin menadin. We can't come to conclusions regarding oinshin, regarding penalties or punishments, through kal v'chomer logic. So even though there might be a point of kal v'chomer to be raised over here, I'm nevertheless not going to draw any conclusions based on it, because that would be a problem of oinshin menadin, and we don't come to conclusions regarding onesh through kal v'chomer logic. Now, the source for that is Desanya. What we've done, by the way, with the markings, we've double underlined two expressions. We see the expression Ein Oinshin Minadin, and a few lines later you'll see Azhora Minayin. That Ein, we don't come to Azhora conclusions either through Kal v'chomer logic. So the first stage involves the punishment element. We don't come to determine a particular punishment through kal v'chomer logic. Desanya, we have a source. We've included all of this, even though this is a second Tanaic source. We've included it in one frame because all of the topics are interrelated. Desanya, ish asher yikach es achoiso bas oviv o bas imo, one who has relations with his sister. The pasuk describes half sisters, a sister who is the daughter of one's father. In other words, the two have a common father, or they have a common mother. Either way, she is a forbidden relative. That's one's sister. For more accuracy, we would say one's half sister. Ein li elo bas oviv shelo bas imoi, ubas imoi shelo bas oviv. From the pasuk, I would know only a half sister who comes from a same father, not same mother, or the opposite. Bas imoi ubas oviv minayin. From where should I know that a full sister is also one who conducts intimacy with a full sister is also in violation? Talmud lomar ervas achoiso gila. This is an additional pasuk, and we can call it an extra pasuk, if you will. It comes to cover the case of bas imoi ubas oviv. Well, ad shelo yomar yeshli bedin. Without the Torah actually giving us this extra pasuk, I could have figured this out on my own. Im onash al bas oviv shelo bas imo shelo bas oviv. If the Torah is willing to suggest a punishment for a half sister, bas oviv ubas imoi lo kol shekein, a full-fledged sister, namely, she is the daughter of your father and mother, all the more so there should be an oinish. So why is it that we have a pasuk to tell us that? Ha lamadata, from the presence of this pasuk, ervas achoso gila, we learn she'ein oinshin menadin, that punishments cannot be derived through kal v'chomer logic. The expression minadin means through kal v'chomer logic. Oinesh shamanu. So the principle regarding the basic punishment we have learned already. Azhara minayin. What about the establishment of an azhara pasuk, or the azhara for a particular offense through kal v'chomer logic? Talmud lomar, the pasuk says, ervas achoscha bas ovicha oibas imcha. This pasuk describes a half-sister, that there is an azhara, a warning of the Torah against getting involved with intimacy with her. Ein li elo bas aviv shelo bas imo, ubas imo shelo bas aviv. from this pasuk, I would figure out only a half sister is under the azhara. Bas aviv ubas imoi minayin. How about a full-fledged sister also being under this azhara? Talmud lomar, ervas bas eshes avicha, moiledes avicha, achoscha hi. This is an additional pasuk which is coming to teach me about a full-fledged sister being under this azhara. Well, ad shelo yomar, even without the pasuk yesh li min hadin, I could have figured it out through kal vachomer logic as follows: ma im huzhar al bas imoi shelo bas aviv ubas aviv shelo bas imo. If the Torah is already providing an azhara against a half sister, bas aviv ubas imo lo kol shekein, a full fledged sister all the more so. So then the question is, why does the Torah provide an extra pasuk to cover the full-fledged sister? From this we conclude that the Azhara as well cannot be reached through Kal Vachomer logic. Chayvei Malkios Minayin. Rashi focuses the question Malkis Minola, Amasnis in Koi. This particular section is going on the Mishnah. The Omar Ein Oisen Din Hazoma Achi Gomer Hadin. That until Gemar Din, we don't carry out the principle of Kasher Zoma. V'yolif La Minefesh Benefesh, the Mishtoi Bechayve Misois. And we saw that that idea is learned, we saw this in the Mishnah, that that's learned from the expression nefesh benefesh. Chayvei malchus minolon, namely, what's the question? Heiduhu shechayev malchus, v'huzmu. Let us say two witnesses testified that so-and-so ate pork. Through their testimony, the defendant would be chayev malchus, and then the witnesses were shown to be liars. From where do we know that the original set of witnesses that lied about our defendant, that they do not get lashes unless the original defendant had reached a verdict concerning him prior to the Hazoma? Talmud Lomar, Rosha, Rosha. Through a word comparison from the case of Chayvei Misos to Chayvei Malkios, we come to the same conclusion, that just like in the case of Chayvei Misos, there's no Hazoma until there's a Gemar Din, so too with regard to Chayvei Malkios. Chayvei Golios Minayin, what about witnesses that come to testify falsely about an inadvertent murder? That's called Rotzeach B'Shogeg. Rotzeach B'Shogeg is Chayev Golos. So how do I know that there first has to be a Gemar Din regarding the defendant's Chiyuv Golos, and only then can we apply the Din of Kasher Zomam to the witnesses? The answer to that is Asyo Rotzeach Rotzeach. Through a word comparison between these words, Rotzeach Rotzeach, we achieve the same conclusion, that there's no Hazoma until there had previously been a Gemar Din concerning the defendant. Tanya, Omar Rebuta ben Tavoi, Ere ben Nechama. This expression is of a euphemistic nature. Rashi points out, Lo Ere ben Nechama, I won't see solace. In other words, he's saying a type of oath, if you will. He says, "Ere ben Achama im lo harakti aid zomeim." If it's such that I did not see to the execution of an aid zomeim, a singular aid zomeim, lahotzi miliban shel tzedukim sheomrim ein ha'aidim zom neharogim ad shiyorei kanidon. And in my case, I saw to it that the aid zomeim was put to death before the defendant was killed. This is, of course, in contrast to the tzedukim that say that edim zomimim are not killed unless the defendant is killed. I killed an eid zomim, says Rabbeinu Taboi, before the defendant was killed, which is the seemingly the right thing to do. Amarlo Shimon ben Shetach. Shimon ben Shetach, upon hearing Rabbeinu ben Taboi's story, he says, Erev ben Achoma, also this expression we'll call it of exasperation, or at least of an oath nature, he says, Erev ben Achoma im lo shafachta dam noki, if you are not guilty of murder yourself. In other words, your execution of a singular eid zomim is tantamount to murder. Why? Sharei omru chachomim eino eidim zomim neherogim ad shiyazumu shnehem. The law is that eidim zomimim are not to be touched, they're not to be executed unless both of them are found to be zomimim. Not like in your case where one was found to be a zomim and you executed him. V'ein loikin ad shiyazumu shnehem. And likewise, there's no malchus until both of the witnesses are found to be lying. Miad kiba lov Rabbeinu ben Taboi sheno moira hayro elo lifnei Shimon ben Shetach. Rabbeinu ben Taboi, upon hearing his mistake, accepted on himself that he would not offer any legal rulings unless he is in the presence of Shimon ben Shetach, who would serve to catch any mistakes. V'chol yomov shel Rabbeinu ben Taboi hayim shatech al kivroi shel oisu ha'ed. And throughout his life, Rabbeinu ben Taboi used to prostrate himself on the grave of that witness that he erroneously saw to his execution. V'yokoylo nishma, and his voice was heard. U'kisvur mom lomar koylo shel horug. People thought that the voice that emanated from that grave was the voice of the victim. Omar, Rabbeinu ben Taboi said, Koli sheli hu, it's my voice. I'm screaming out, praying for penitence. It's my voice, he says. Teidu, and I will prove it. L'mochar humes, he says tomorrow, in a euphemistic way, but on himself, he says he will die. Ein kolo nishma, and you won't hear the voice anymore. Omalei Rav Acha brei de Rava Ravashi. This doesn't necessarily prove that the voice that was heard all that time was that of Rabbeinu ben Taboi. The fact that there's now silence is Dilma Bedina Kom Bahadei. It could be that it was the voice of the singular witness that was killed that stopped, because he, now that Rabbeinu ben Taboi died, he was able to see his justice in the world of truth in heaven. Inami puse paise, or maybe they achieved as a result of Rabbeinu ben Taboi dying, he was assuaged and appeased, and as a result of that, it was the voice of the horug that stopped, because he now felt appeased. The topic heading that we have for this section, this is a new Mishnah. Ma nilmad mehaposuk al pishnei edim oy al pishloisha edim yokum dovar. What halachas do we learn from this pasuk that says that through the testimony of two witnesses or three witnesses shall the matter be established? What is the necessity of teaching both numbers, two and three? The Mishnah, Alpi Shnei Edim O Alpi Shloisha Edim Yokum Dovar. That's the pasuk. Im Miskayemes Ha'edus Bishnayim Lama Parada Kosov Bishlosha. If testimony can be established with two, why does the Torah mention three? Why does it enumerate that case? Elo Lahokish Shnayim Lishlosha. Rather, the purpose is to compare two to three. Ma Shloisha Mazimim Esashnayim. Just like three can render false two, Af Hashnayim Yozumu Esashlosha. So to two have the ability to render three as false. Uminayin afilu mea. From where do we know that two can render even 100 false? Talmud Lomer edim. It says edim, witnesses, in the plural. Rabbi Shimon Omer, ma shnayim eino neherogim ad shiu shneim zomimim. Just like in the case of two witnesses, we don't kill witnesses who falsified testimony concerning a murder until both of them are found to be zomimim. af shloisha, so too in a group of three witnesses, einon neherogin, you don't kill the witnesses, ach you shloshtan zomimin, until we show all three to be zomimin. And how do you know that even in a set of witnesses that numbers 100 witnesses, that there will be no din of kasher zomam until all 100 are found to be liars? Talmud Lomar, Edim. Rabbi Akiva Omer, Lo bo hashlishi lahokel elo lahachmir olov velasois dinoi kayotze be'elu. Let's glance at Rashi. Rabbi Kiva Omer, Lo bo hashlishi, Lo hutzruch lelamdenu zois. That which you taught, Reb Shimon, I don't need that to be said, spelled out. Tevimelo yadino and shishnai mazim es hashlosha. I would be able to figure that out on my own, that two could mazim three. Sharei hashnaim sherim l'chol edios. We know that two witnesses are kosher for all forms of testimony. And also, it follows on its own that there's no zomim, there's no din of hazoma, until all are found to be liars. They have all been made into one set of witnesses. The pasuk already indicates the way we treat even a large group of witnesses, but we treat them as a single unit. Therefore, what is the purpose of this pasuk? Says Rabbi Akiva. V'lo bo ela lahachmir olov. The pasuk that enumerates three is coming for a stringency. Shelo tomar, that one should not say, hayu ubalavu hoyso edus miskayemes. Since even without the third witness, the testimony could have been established. In other words, I didn't need to have three people testifying about the murder. Even if two testified about the murder, their testimony would have been accepted. Therefore, since the testimony without the third fellow could have stood on its own, maybe lo yasu bo din hazoma. That when they're exposed as liars, the third witness should be able to escape punishment by the claim that you didn't really need me in the first place. The pasuk comes to reveal to us, says Rabbi Akiva, that the third witness is also part of those that established the matter. Continuing in the Mishnah, v'im kein ona shakosov. If so be it that the Torah punishes lanitpal li'ovri avera, he who is a subsidiary or an accessory to the ovri avera. The third guy is a tofel; he is subsidiary to the first two, and yet he's treated as a mainstay. Al achas kama v'kama yishalim schar lanitpal li'oisei mitzvah koisei mitzvah. Then all the more so, we know that reward will be paid to one who is a subsidiary to those who are performing a mitzvah, as if he were the mitzvah performer himself. Uma shnayim nimtzo echod mehem korov opasul eduson b'teva. And just like in the case of two witnesses, if one of them is found to be a relative or unfit to testify, the whole testimony falls away. Af shlosha, even so too, a case of three witnesses, three people that come as a singular unit of testimony, they come to testify together. If one of them is found to be a relative or unfit for testimony, eduson b'teva, the entire group is rejected. Minayin afilu mea, how do you know that even if a single group of 100 witnesses, one of them is found to be unfit or a relative, that they're all rejected? Talmud Lomar, edim. The Torah uses a general word referring to edim in the plural. Omar Rav Yossi, Bameh Devo Mamurim. We are now glancing at the continuation of the mission at the top of Daf Vav. Rav Yossi says, under what circumstances is it that we say that if one of them is found to be a korv posel, that the entire testimony is voided? That's bedine nefashas, when it comes to a capital case. The Torah uses a posel, v'hitzilu ho'edo, which means we strive to get the defendant off the hook, so that if any information that comes our way that would seem to be able to exonerate him, we will use it. So that's true when you're dealing with a capital case. Avo bedine momenus,
Tiskayim ha'edus b'shar. If it's a financial issue, and you have a group of witnesses, you have three or more witnesses, and one of them is found to be a korev apostle, we will reject him, so to speak, but not the entire testimony. And we will say that since you have two kosher witnesses, the case will stand and they can testify against the defendant. Rebbe Omer, Echod Dinei Momonos v'Echod Dinei Nefoshos. Rebbe says we are to parallel Dinei Momonos to Dinei Nefoshos, and that in a case of Dinei Momonos as well, Eidusan Betela. V'Emosai, Bizman Shehisru Bohen. When is it that they are viewed as a single unit of testimony, and that we say that if one of them is found to be a korev apostle, that the whole thing is batel? That's if they warned the defendant. Rashi says at the second line from the top, Bizman Shehisru Bohen, Ubedinei Nefoshos, Ki Amrinon Betela. This is true when the, even in the case of Dinei Nefoshos, this is only if the korev apostle, the relative or the unfit, participated in the testimony process from the beginning. To be one of those that were warning the offender. Avol, the Mishnah continues, Bizman Shelo Hisru Bohen, if the korev apostle might have been present when the capital offense took place, but didn't actively participate in the warning of the defendant, he therefore doesn't really demonstrate that he's part of this group. And as a result of that, so even though he might have seen the murder, he's not part of the group. And therefore the testimony, even though a korev apostle saw the event, the testimony will nevertheless stand, even in a capital case. How else will we treat a case that, let us say, you have three people that saw a murder? The three people were made of two brothers and an outsider. Are you going to say that there's no case? That's not true. There still is grounds for testimony and prosecution, provided that that one of the two brothers remained as an outsider. Even though he saw it, he didn't necessarily participate in the warning. Rashi, four lines from the top. Avol im lo hisubohen velo kivnu lios eidim badavar. They didn't warn and didn't intend to be formal witnesses. Lo botla edus ha'cherim b'shvil riyosim shel elu. The testimony of the others will not be voided because of the viewing of these, namely of the korev apostle. De'ma'asu shnei achim shro im shlishi min ashut b'echot sharages nefesh. But otherwise, how will you deal with a case where three people saw a murder, but two of them happen to be brothers? Are you going to say there's no case? The answer is no, there is a case, provided one of the two brothers remained on the outside, so to speak, by not participating in the warning. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.